want your soul.
It started at 4:43 a.m. The noise jolted me awake. It sounded like there was a giant truck revving its engine right there in our bedroom. Exhaust fumes wafted in through the open window. It was a bad way to start the day. "What is that?" my wife moaned. We'd both slept poorly because our daughter had crawled into our bed at 1 a.m. and kept kicking us in the face until we were both half hanging off the bed while she snored away. "I think it's the start of the apocalypse. Go back to sleep," I said. "No way can I sleep through that racket," Vanessa, my wife, replied. She rolled out of bed and shut the window. That helped a little, but it still sounded like a war out there. She pulled the curtains back and looked outside. "It's the fucking neighbor. He's mowing his lawn. Before the sun is up, it's still dark outside. We need to have a talk with him and let him know that this is not okay. It's not even 5 a.m. Keegan, our daughter, then woke up crying. "Well, I guess that's that," I muttered and got out of bed myself. "I'll go over there and talk to him after I have some coffee." "Well, bring me some too," Vanessa said. "Daddy, bring me some Smarties," my daughter shouted. No, Smarties for breakfast. You can have a banana or you can have toast, but not any Smarties." "Fine," she huffed. "Toast, and I want it cut into shapes." I sighed. This was really the last thing I wanted to be doing at 4:45 on a Saturday morning. Making coffee and cutting toast into animal shapes instead of drooling in my sleep and dreaming off of a gentler world, but here we are. I walked into the kitchen and started the coffee and the toast, and then looked out the living room window. Sure enough, there was Mr. Lemsky, mowing his damn lawn, in his bathrobe, no less. That was another thing that I had no desire to do. Get into it with him about this, or really talk to him at all about anything ever beyond a friendly wave and a howdy neighbor. By the time I was awake enough to form a coherent thought, it was almost 6 o'clock, and I had consumed 4 cups of coffee. And Mr. Lemsky was still at it, which was very strange because his yard isn't very big at all. It shouldn't take more than a 40-minute mow job, at the most. But here it was, an hour and 15 minutes later, and he was still out there at it. I got semi-dressed and stumbled outside. I walked across my own yard, which I noted needed mowing itself. Maybe I'll tell him that if he mows my lawn and promises to never start so early again, I'll let it go. But I knew that I wouldn't do that. I was a coward. As I got closer, I observed with some confusion that his lawn was already mowed. He was going over it a second time now. I walked up to our property line, denoted by the contrast between mowed and unmowed grass, and started waving my hands in the air, waiting for him to notice me. But he never did. He just stared straight ahead and kept pushing the lawnmower. "Hey," I shouted, but it wasn't working. I could barely hear myself, and so I knew that he wouldn't be able to hear me from across the yard, right behind the lawnmower. God damn it. I walked across his yard until I was right behind him. "Hey!" But nothing. Then I tapped him on his shoulder, and nothing. He just kept pushing the lawnmower onward over the already mowed lawn. I didn't know what to do. "All right, well, I'll catch him after he finishes, I guess. Maybe he's in the zone." I shrugged and was getting ready to turn back to my house when I saw a trickle of what was presumably urine run down his bare leg. Jesus! I went back to my house and opened the door. Vanessa was already reading a book to Keegan, and she stopped when I came in and looked up. "Well, did you talk to him?" He couldn't hear me. "I'll go over there once he stops. He's got to stop sometime, right? And I'm a little worried about him, honestly. I saw him, you know, piss on himself." "What? Mr. Lemsky peed his pants out there?" asked my daughter, and then she started laughing. "Well, sometimes that happens, kiddo. You used to do that. We do a lot of that when we're kids, and then we don't do it for a while, and then when we get older, we sometimes start doing it again," I explained. And that gave her something to think about, at the least. "There's more. He's already done with the lawn. He's just going over it a second time." "Well, maybe he missed a few spots," Vanessa said. "No, I don't think he did. It's perfect. There's not a blade of grass higher than any other blade of grass." "Hmm, that is strange. Do you think he's okay? Should we call somebody?" I shrugged. "Well, who are we going to call, Vanessa? The police? Tell them that our retired neighbor is mowing his lawn twice while pissing all over himself? I mean, what are they supposed to do?" By 8 o'clock in the morning, I was done cooking the bacon, and Mr. Limsky was still at it, mowing his lawn for what must have been the fifth time. I tried not to think about it, but it was hard. "After breakfast, we should go somewhere," I said. "It's a beautiful day. There's no sense in staying cooped up here all day." "Why does Mr. Limsky keep mowing his lawn, Dad?" "I don't know, kiddo," I muttered. "I don't know. You want to go to the playground or something?" "Yeah, I do. That'd be great," she shouted. "I'm going to stay here and try to go back to sleep if that's okay," my wife said. "Yeah, sure, honey. That's fine. I felt like going back to sleep myself and even after all that coffee, but the desire to get far away from the sound of the lawnmower outweighed my tiredness. We finished breakfast and then Keegan and I headed to the playground. But at 9 a.m. I got a text from Vanessa. "Can't sleep. He's still mowing," the text read. Then I got another one at 9:30. "I'm really starting to get worried. This isn't normal." Then she sent me another text at 10 a.m. "I went over there and tried to talk to him, but it's like he's in a trance. Please come home now." I sighed but complied. I grabbed Keegan and we drove home. I felt a deep sense of unease that grew more intense the closer I got. "What am I afraid of, an old man mowing his lawn?" I chided myself. It didn't work because my instinctive answer was, "Yeah, actually I was. This was fucking weird." I turned onto my street and prayed that Mr. Limsky would be done mowing the lawn by now. He'd tell us it was just a practical joke and we'd all have a good laugh over it, but soon enough I saw that that wasn't going to happen. As I pulled into my driveway, I saw that he was still out there. I thought I saw a streak of brown running down his leg now, but it was hard to tell for sure because he was going around under the shade of his ancient apple tree. I walked inside and Vanessa was at the kitchen table with bags under her eyes and a glass of wine in front of her. "Please make it stop," she said. "Honey, I don't know how to do that. I suddenly felt very tired and in need of a drink myself." "Well, then call the cops." "Why don't you call the cops?" I asked. "Fine. It's just that I do everything else around here, so I thought maybe you could help this one time." I held my tongue. I did plenty around the house, but I knew that now wasn't the time to point fingers. "Okay, all right, I'll call the police. He's not run out of gas yet?" "I've been watching him," said Vanessa. "He's got a can of gas in his driveway. Sometimes he grabs it when he passes by and gasses up while still pushing the mower. It's crazy. Please call 911 now." "All right, all right." I grabbed the phone and proceeded to have one of the most awkward phone conversations of my life. It was 10 minutes with the dispatch and then another 10 minutes with an officer. And finally, they agreed to come over and check it out. 15 minutes later, I watched out the window as the cop car pulled into Mr. Limsky's driveway. A single officer got out and walked over to him. The cop was waving his hands and shouting, but it wasn't working. Then the cop grabbed Mr. Limsky's shoulder and spun him around forcefully, and this caused Mr. Limsky to finally let go of the throttle, for the first time all day. And then, the lawnmower stopped moving. It was still running, though, because he had taped its safety shut off down. I held my breath as I waited to see what would happen next. To my shock and awe, Mr. Limsky opened his mouth, and something emerged from it. It looked like a long, thin tentacle. The tentacle then wrapped itself around the cop's neck and lifted him up into the air. Then, a second tentacle emerged from Mr. Limsky's mouth and made its way down the cop's throat. I slammed the curtain shut and noticed that I, too, like Mr. Limsky earlier, had pissed myself. "What's going on out there?" asked Vanessa from the kitchen. "Did the cops get there?" I didn't have a good answer, so I didn't say anything. "Honey," said Vanessa, walking over, "are you all right?" From outside, we heard the whine of a new machine join in with the lawnmower. Vanessa opened the curtain and I turned slowly to look out. The cop was now out there going around the old apple tree with a weed whacker, while Mr. Limsky was back pushing the lawnmower around again. It's 5 p.m. now. Besides Mr. Limsky, there are now four cops in his yard doing various tasks. One is still at it with the weed whacker. Another one has been going at the shrubs with a pair of clippers for hours now. But the one who concerns me the most is the one who's going around spraying the ground from a bottle full of neon blue liquid that Mr. Limsky at one point puked out of his mouth. I personally am petitioning the family to pack up the car now and start driving to Florida where Vanessa's mother lives. I have no idea what's going on, but this does not look good. I wasn't sure what was more bizarre and terrifying. My neighbor mowing his lawn for the 13th straight hour, aided by four uniformed cops performing various other landscaping tasks, or the woman in the gas mask and plastic poncho that emerged from the tan Toyota Camry which had wrapped itself around Mr. Limsky's apple tree. "Damn it, Kelly," she shouted through the mask, clearly unsteady on her feet after the crash. "No more driving for you, ever." I crouched down in the driveway behind my own car, which I had just finished loading in preparation to get my family far away from whatever horrible thing was happening next door. I watched as the woman, who was not impressed by Kelly's driving skills, pulled a large blaster from under her poncho. That's the best way I could describe it. It wasn't a gun. It was a fucking blaster. The woman pointed her blaster at Mr. Limsky and pulled the trigger. And that was it for Mr. Limsky. He exploded in a horrible mess of neon blue gore. A still writhing tentacle flew through the air and slapped against the windshield of the Camry. I saw the wipers go on in an effort to clear the things away. I turned then and saw my wife looking out the window of our house, horrified in amazement. She had her hand over our daughter's eyes, and Keegan was prying away at Vanessa's fingers in order to get a look at the excitement. Me? I had had enough excitement for the day. I had no idea who this woman was, but I knew that she had some sort of blaster gun, and I struggled to come up with some way to get my family out of there without drawing anybody's attention. The woman then turned her blaster to each of the four cops and turned and quickly reduced them into four gooey blobs of neon blue slime. If I can just get back inside without her noticing me, then we can slip out the back and Uber it out of Dodge. Doesn't matter where, just somewhere far away. You, the woman then shouted. Her poncho was absolutely drenched with the insides of these things she'd just blown apart. Hiding behind your car, you need to stand up slowly. Oh, shit. I stood up with my hands in the air. Ma'am, please don't shoot me. I'm not one of them, I swear. Well, we'll see about that, she said. Meanwhile, your neighbor, Mr. Limsky, he lived alone, right? That's right, ma'am. His wife died last year, poor guy. I looked over at the puddle of strange gore that used to be Mr. Limsky. Poor guy indeed. Here's what's going to happen. I'm going to go inside his house and get cleaned up, and you're going to go inside your house and wait there for us. If you try anything smart, I promise that you'll end up like your neighbor here. Not a pretty sight, right? You agree? I took one more look, fought back the urge to puke, and nodded my head in earnest agreement. And same goes for your family. I see them through the window. Got it? Now get inside now. I didn't need any more encouragement. I ran back inside my house, back to Vanessa and Keegan. Who is that out there? Asked Vanessa. What's going on? You think I know? I snapped. I don't, but I think maybe she's a good guy. I mean, she blasted those things out there. Well, what if Mr. Limsky was the good guy? What if there are no good guys? Asked Vanessa. I don't know. I don't fucking know. You're acting like I'm some sort of expert. But I think we have to take a chance, at least. If she's a bad guy, then we're probably fucked. But I think we just have to think positively about this and hope that she's a good guy. Think positively, said Vanessa. Think positively? That's all you want to do is think positively. How about we think about survival for once? I gritted my teeth. That's what I'm saying, dear. I think that our best chance at survival is to stay put and talk things over nicely with the lady in the gas mask outside. What's survival? Asked my daughter. It's what we're trying to do, kiddo, I explained. On a day-to-day basis, none of us will finally pull it off. What? It means we're not trying to die, I said. Are we gonna die? Someday, a long, long time from now. Obviously, when I said that to my daughter, I wasn't sure about that, but of course, what else could I say? I turned on an episode of cartoons for Keegan and then went into the kitchen where Vanessa was pacing around in a circle. Are you sure about this? Waiting here for them to come to us? Fuck no, I'm not sure about that. Are you kidding me? What else are we supposed to do? I guess you're right. Okay. That's probably what we should do then, she said. All right. I love you. I love you too. And on that note, we waited. 20 minutes later, I saw them approaching my house. There were two women and one man, each wearing a gas mask. The woman in front was still carrying her blaster, but she had cleaned all the blue substance off of her and was wearing some of Mr. Limsky's clothes. I met them at the door. Did any of you come into contact with any of them? Asked the woman in front. No. Of course, this was a lie. I had come up behind Mr. Limsky and tapped him on the shoulder. Vanessa had also approached him separately. What is this about? I asked. Kelly, said the blaster lady to the woman behind her. Go ahead and test him. Kelly then pulled out a large syringe out of her back pocket and took a step towards me. Now, wait a minute here. You're not going to stick me with that needle until you tell me why I should let you. What's going on? You need to submit to the test, said the lady, or we can presume that you have the virus and we're going to terminate you. Well, then I'll submit to the test, I said, rolling up my sleeve and offering my arm. Not there, said Kelly, a second before she jammed the syringe into the side of my head. Kelly then pulled the needle out. Then she went into her backpack again and brought out a test tube filled with the green fluid. She unscrewed the tube and shot some of my brain juice into it. Then she put the lid back on, shook it, and held it up to the light. He's clear, said Kelly. Now for his family, said the blaster lady. I watched in helpless horror as Kelly jammed a giant needle into my wife's head, and then my daughter's head. Keegan couldn't stop crying, and it made me sick to my stomach. They're all clear. They're all good to go, said Kelly. We're clear, I said. Now do you want to tell me just what the fuck is going on outside? Let's start with who you are. I'm Kelly Raymond, said the one with the needle, and my boyfriend just got turned into a zombie, like Mr. Limsky, but a little different. I had to keep cutting his fingers off. A zombie? You had to keep cutting off his fingers? Of course, right, that all makes sense to me now. And you can call me Allie, said the blaster lady, taking off her gas mask. The others did as well. And yes, zombies, they are real, and the virus is going stronger and more unpredictable by the day. Oh, okay, zombies. I looked to the man in the group. And you are? Martin Henwood, said the man. I was a former colleague of your neighbor, before he retired. Ah, I said, Mr. Limsky was a coroner, I think. A mortician, said Martin, and he was a true artist, which is why I had to call him out of retirement for my latest job. Martin was visibly upset and fighting back tears, but he went on. A body came in for burial. The dead woman had apparently murdered her boyfriend in a particularly brutal way. There were rumors that the necklace she still wore, even after her supposed autopsy, was cursed. It was a strange case indeed, because for starters, I saw no sign that an autopsy was ever performed. I suspected that the medical examiner had gotten spooked by the rumors and had opted to rule the death a suicide without actually cutting into the body. Then, too, as I looked her over, I saw that the necklace had no clasp. There was no way to get it off without cutting it off. I had the worst headache of my life, but I tried to stay focused. Let me guess, the necklace made her a zombie. Well, we think that's the case, said Allie. Tell him what happened next, Martin. Martin then cleared his throat. Well, I thought the whole matter was nonsense. A cursed necklace? I'm a man of science, not superstition. Or at least I was. When I started the embalming process, that's when I began to think twice. What came out of the body was not any kind of blood that I have ever seen in my 25 years of experience. It was neon blue. Just so, said Martin, and that's when I called Chuck Limsky. He had never encountered anything like that before either, and in fact didn't even believe me. He wanted to see for himself, so he came over and I showed him the body. Like me, he was both fascinated and baffled. He wanted to spend some time with the body, so I left us to get sandwiches. When I got back, Chuck was standing in the morgue dripping with blue slime and the body was gone. What happened? I asked. Limsky said the body exploded and he had to go home and clean up. He said he'd be right back and never seen anything like it, but I didn't see him again. Not until today. Martin then trailed off and broke down in sobs. We caught up with Martin shortly after this morning. We had heard about the case of the necklace girl and thought it smelled strongly of zombie. Martin told us what had happened and brought us to Mr. Limsky's house and now here we are, in your living room. Well, what about the necklace, I asked, fighting back the thousands of thoughts fighting for control of my mind. Where did it come from? How does it turn you into a zombie? Well, that's one of the things we're looking to find out, said Allie. We have it with us and are going to run it through a variety of tests. Typically, the virus is spread in the usual ways, like somebody coughing on you, or, in this case, exploding. The necklace is a new development. We are seeing lots of new developments and have been dealing with the basic zombie virus for some time now and containing it well, but now things have changed. Our ultimate goal is to find a vaccine for the new super strains, but first we need to fully understand what we're up against here, she said. I looked over to the couch across the room where Keegan was sitting on Vanessa's lap, still watching Fig the Fox. Vanessa was listening intently to our hushed talk and I could see the terror etched into her face. I'm sure it was etched into mine as well. It's not safe for you here anymore, said Allie. The people I work with, I used to work with, yeah, they're concerned about the zombies, but they're just as concerned with people finding out about it. They are ruthless and will be here within a day or so. Besides, we need a new ride. since Kelly wrecked our car. She'll never be allowed to drive again. I happen to notice that you have a nice roomy SUV in your driveway, and that could fit us all. We'll rest up for a few hours and then we'll torch Mr. Limsky's property. Then if we can hit the road, it's up to you. Come with us or stay behind for them to find you. All right, give me a minute. Let me talk to my wife. We're on the road now. Allie's driving. I'm obviously not going to say where we're going. I just wanted to let everybody know that the apocalypse is coming, even if we don't get there in time.